I feel a little bit like Jim Gosey, kind of manipulated by the organizing committee. This is a rather prestigious group of speakers. You all are aware of the work that Dick Clark and Don Adams have done in doing comprehensive research dealing with cow-calf production systems. And obviously, Tom Osborne is familiar to all of you. And so the organizing committee was faced with the decision of who are we going to get to follow Tom Osborne in this group of who's who. And somebody said, well, they just hired Roger Gates at South Dakota. And somebody else said, who's he? And they immediately agreed, that's the guy. I want to recognize my co-author, Sandy Smarts, on the faculty at Brookings Range Science, and Pat Reese is here at Scottsbluff Research and Extension, also in range management. And what am I not doing? Technology is great when it works. I wanted to start with one of my concluding slides, knowing that Tom Osborne was going to be here, and maybe one of his staff members might linger, and suggest that one of the things we need to think about in looking at our response to drought as a culture and as a society, I recognize the interest, certainly, that legislators have in providing assistance to livestock producers in the midst of a drought. But I would suggest that we ought to think hard about how we approach that, and that the temptation to accept feed subsidies provides an incentive for bad management in a drought in terms of matching supply and demand. Probably one of the most judicious decisions is to destock. And so we need to find incentives that don't provide an incentive that's based on current inventory and, in fact, insist that that inventory be maintained to fully benefit from those subsidies. Part of what we need to understand about drought and recovery is that in the northern Great Plains, we're faced with adapting to the environment that we're in. Liberty Hyde Bailey was the Dean of Agriculture at Cornell at the turn of the last century, and he suggested that all causes of decline in farms can be expressed as a lack of adaptation to the natural surroundings. And so if we're going to survive in the ranching business, a key component of that is adapting to the natural surroundings that we find ourselves in. We'll quickly remind ourselves where we've been in recent history. These are December drought monitor assessments during the several recent years. Just go through those quick, Steve. And the point is, we started recent history in pretty good shape. Go ahead. And that's where we find ourselves right now. Now, one of the things we all like to be is optimistic. And for the second time, I've accepted a title that has to do with recovery after drought. And the implication in that title is that we're concluding the current drought that we're in. But I think there's probably no assurance that that's true. If we review the nature of precipitation The fact is, there are more dry years than there are wet years. And we think easily about average precipitation, but in fact, that's not a very good index. That's really higher than the precipitation we're going to get most years. The other thing that influences our thinking is our most recent experience. This is a Palmer Hydrological Drought Index, which is kind of a overall averaging approach, and this happens to be for South Dakota. But the thing that's clearly evident in this is the period of the 1990s was the wettest period that we experienced since they started keeping records. And our thinking is so greatly influenced by our most recent experience. And so a lot of changes may have been made in management and stocking during that wet period of the 1990s, and we're now having to recover from some of those decisions. A truth about rangeland vegetation is that either it's in the middle of a drought or it's recovering from the last one. That's the nature of where we are. The good news is that that vegetation developed under that kind of environment and is very well adapted to recovery. Some of the best information we have about drought is from follows our national experience in the Dust Bowl years. And this simply says that western wheatgrass is one of those plants that we find that's important on the rangeland, and it's very well adapted to recover relatively rapidly as moisture returns. So as we think about this journey of recovery, there's a couple things we need to embark on and establish. And the first is the destination. Leonard Jolly is a liaison for NRCS to the Society for Range Management. And he insists that I didn't hear this story from him, but I'm pretty sure I did. He tells a story about a convoy, the captain of a convoy ship during World War II, who was given instructions to join an escort of a destroyer on a top secret mission. They were under strict orders of radio silence. And so he was proceeding to where this rendezvous would occur, and a devastating storm developed. And they lost all sense of where they were, but finally made visual contact with the ship and then approached it and recognized that it was part of this convoy that they were supposed to join. And the captain of the escort boat said, or called to the larger destroyer and said, "Where are we?" And the response came back, "Well, where'd you come from?" And said, "We've been in a huge storm. We don't know." "Well, where are you going?" "Well, this is a top secret mission, and those orders haven't been given yet." The final reply came back, "Well, if you don't know where you've been and you don't know where you're going, what difference does it make where you are?" And so it's important that we have a destination in mind. Yogi Berra captured the same kind of essence of that spirit. If you don't know where you're going, you might end up someplace else. I'd suggest that our destination on this journey of recovery is high range condition. I'd like to share a couple aspects of the benefits of that verify that that's a important destination. Go ahead. And I want to do that by looking at a stocking rate study that was done at Cottonwood, started in 1942, involved three stocking rates, low, medium, and high, which led to low, medium, and high range condition. We're going to visit about this somewhat later again. The important parameters that were collected were forage production data and weather data. And if you can, just look at these lines that separate At the beginning of this experiment, the range condition was relatively uniform, and forage production was relatively uniform there in 1942, 1943. By imposing those different stocking rates, there was a divergence in range condition, and consequently a divergence in forage production and therefore carrying capacity. And so if you look, for instance, in 1949, the production from the high range condition is almost three times what it is at low range condition. The other thing that's characteristic of high range condition is the nature of the soil. The Society for Range Management uses a meteorological definition for drought, that drought is those periods of time when precipitation is 75% of the long-term average or less. Carr in the mid-60s introduced the concept of agricultural drought, and all he said was that drought is really an expression of the plant's response to growing conditions. And that's primarily due to soil moisture. And so we can find ourselves, through inappropriate management of the vegetation and the soil, putting ourselves in a downward spiral because the vegetation is so important to harvesting the precipitation that does occur. So in high range condition, the infiltration is higher. We get greater benefit out of the precipitation that does occur. The other aspect of high range condition is the diversity of species that occur there and the benefit that is to forage production. This is a major oversimplification, but in those clayey sites at Cottonwood, for instance, two important species are the short grass, warm season grasses like buffalo grass and blue grama, and the cool season mid grass, western wheatgrass. If both of those species are present, we get the benefit of different cycles of production, better able to fully exploit the resources that are available. As that vegetation community declines in range condition, it's primarily due to the disappearance or the depletion of those midgrass cool seasons, and so you're left with a less diverse vegetation mix that's less productive. The other condition, or the other attribute of high range condition, is its capacity to recover after drought. And if you look at the response of low and high range condition after an extremely dry year in 1966, the production the following year responded much more rapidly and to a much greater extent under high range condition in 1967. And I've referred to the collection of forage production data and weather data. Sandy Smart has gone back and examined those relationships and found that one of the best indicators of seasonal production is the precipitation that occurs in April, May, and June. And if we divide that April, May, and June precipitation into years that are normal or below normal and above normal, and then look at the response of the vegetation that's been exposed to light, moderate, and heavy stocking, that would be high, moderate, and low range condition. The thing that's striking in these data are that at high range condition, you can produce as much forage in the dry years as you do from low range condition in the wet years. So the benefit of high range condition is clear. I suggested that we do need to know where we are if we embark on this journey. Okay. And the way to do that is with inventory. It's important that we know the condition of our rangeland. What is the vegetation composition? What is its level of production? What's reasonable in terms of a goal? And then if we're going to do this this journey, we need an itinerary. How do I get there? And I'd suggest, as Mike Kelly did, that Barry's given us some important fundamental principles. We should recognize that drought is cyclical. The rule of thumb, take half and leave half, reminds us of the importance of leaving a residue. What are some of the roles of that residue? Soil cover and the benefits of that. Again, those sites that have high levels of litter, indicative of moderate levels of livestock use, do a much better job of harvesting the incident precipitation. We avoid that cycle of drying out the soil. It serves as a wind barrier that reduces evapotranspiration. It provides the nutrient pool that is available for ongoing plant growth. Extremely important in this part of the world that we get all the precipitation. That includes the precipitation that comes in the form of snow. And carryover vegetation also represents a feed reserve. And particularly during 2002, there were an awful lot of situations where it was important to harvest some or maybe even quite a bit of that standing residue that was carried over from previous years. That's probably an appropriate use as long as it's not overdone. If we do that year after year, then we get into that spiral of downward movement in the vegetation composition and reduce the potential productivity. Okay. Another fundamental principle, avoid using the same pasture at the same time 2 years in a row. And finally, approach our management with a stewardship ethic. Again, Mike Kelly gave us a really good primer on that in visiting with us about the objectives and the management that they're using on the ranch. Some thoughts about things that we can do to promote recovery of vegetation as we hope that we're moving out of a drought. And certainly the response of vegetation is to defoliation, and so avoiding defoliation is the primary way that we're going to allow that vegetation to recover. And so this is just kind of a prioritized list of how you might expect the greatest response. If we can arrest that vegetation for an entire year, we should expect the greatest response. Perhaps the next most beneficial would be graze it only when it's dormant in the wintertime. If we've got a particular weed problem like cheatgrass, a strategy might be to use it very early in the year, use it hard, and then stay off of it for the remainder of the year and allow the desirable vegetation a period of non-use. Somewhat less extreme would be to defer until those most desirable species have fully matured and then graze it at a low stocking rate. And then if we do have abundant spring growth, go ahead and utilize that at a moderate level, but get off before it begins to go reproductive. And important in all of these is to maintain the use of a conservative stocking rate. The overwhelming consensus of the literature is that conservative stocking rates in the long term are certainly most beneficial for the vegetation and usually most financially advantageous. The other thing that we need to do in this itinerary of the journey of recovery is to have a good handle on how much feed is produced by the range land and the distribution of that feed in time, and match that to the demand of the livestock that we're grazing. One of the tools that we've got is to anticipate what season-long production may be. Again, back to the review that Sandy has done, he's looked at the relationship between that spring production, spring precipitation, and season-long production, and found under all three grazing regimes a reliable relationship, an R-square of about 4.4. So 40% of the variation in that season-long production can be explained by that early season production. In Wyoming, Mike Smith suggests that about the same level of confidence can be gotten from using April precipitation alone. The message from that is that we don't have to wait till September to decide that we're in a drought. And so anticipate what production may be the year you're in, and make destocking decisions early rather than late. The other thing that we need to do continuously on this itinerary towards recovery is to monitor where we are. The vegetation, the soil service, keep an eye on the litter. We do a pretty good job of monitoring livestock performance, but we may not do a good job of relating that livestock performance to the vegetation that they're utilizing. And other organisms. Mike Kelly gave us some information about nesting songbirds. That kind of information can be pretty indicative of the health of the ecosystem. Jared Diamond won the Pulitzer Prize for a book, Gun, Steel, and Germs, where he talks about the contribution of agriculture to world history. And he proposes a principle of holism by using the opening lines of the novel Anna Karenina that Leo Tolstoy wrote. And that opening line, or at least the translation of that opening line, is that happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. I'd suggest that we could propose an analog to that for ranching, that profitable ranches are all alike, that unprofitable ranches find different ways to be unprofitable. And I'm indebted to Barry Dunn. A lot of us have benefited from his insights about seeing the ranch from in a big picture. And so that holistic principle says that we need to consider all of the components of the ranch operation and the ranch enterprise. But natural resource management, rangeland production is certainly one of the keys and a fundamental part of that process. And I think I'm going to stop there. I appreciate